Good morning. Okay, so today we're going to learn about the Ark. And we're going to try to solve the mystery of who built the Ark. And as soon as we start reading from the Torah, you're going to say, what kind of mystery is that? It says it right there. Chapter 37 of the book of Exodus is the middle of the fifth reading of Parshas Vayakel. And the fourth reading has absolutely no Rashi whatsoever. So it really isn't much to study. When we get to chapter 37, the Torah says, "Vayas Bezalel es ha'aron." Bezalel fashioned the ark. He made the ark. What did he make it of? Exactly what he was supposed to make it of. Atzei shitim, of acacia wood. Amasayim v'chetzi orkei. It was 2.5 amot in its length. Va'ama v'chetzi rochbe. In its width, it was an ama and a half. And it was an ama v'chetzi kemasi, an ama and a half was its height. That's the dimensions of the Aron. That's what we talked about in Parshas Truma, where the Torah told us you have to make the Aron. So the question is, Bezalel made the Ark. Bezalel was in charge of making everything. Why do we emphasize Bezalel made the Ark? So the Ibn Ezra says that it's only because of the importance of the ark that the Torah attributes a maker to it. Bezalel made the ark. But really, it's all melechas HaKodesh. It's all the things that were made by Bezalel, or at least with Bezalel overseeing it. That's how it was. Ramban sharply disagrees with Ibn Ezra. He says, no, that doesn't work like that. Ramban earlier in chapter 36 says, if the Torah says Bezalel made it, then Bezalel made it. If the Torah doesn't say Bezalel made the other things, then he didn't make the other things. It's like, you got to take it at face value. The Abar Benel says that the reason Bezalel made the Aron was because of its prominence, its importance, the Aron HaKodesh. God's going to be speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu through his Kruvim. So Bezalel said, everybody hands off, back down. This I'm going to make myself. I'm going to take care of this myself. And because he said, I'm going to take it myself, that's why here we have this idea of a Yas Bezalel. And the Meshech Chachma points at something very interesting. He says, we know that all of the Kalim, all the various artifacts of the Beis HaMikdash were replicated multiple times. For example, in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, at once we had 10 tables, 10 menorahs, and over the years, things were replaced. The Kalim that were there in the first Beis HaMikdash, to the best of our knowledge, were not the Kalim there in the second Beis HaMikdash. And even in the pre-Chanukah reality and post-Chanukah reality, everything was remade, including the outer altar. However, he says, when it came to the Aron, there was one Aron made in history. There was never a second Aron made. And when the Aron wasn't available, there was no Aron. But there was no replacement, never a replication, no duplication. And because of that, The specific emphasis here is on making the Aron. This is once forever. And therefore, Bezalel's Aron is hidden away. Bezalel's Aron will be discovered. And that will be the Aron in the third Beis HaMikdash. And because of this, the Torah emphasizes who made the Aron. So now let's take a look at Rashi. What does Rashi say? Vayas Bezalel. Bezalel made the Aron. So did Bezalel make it himself? I mean, it does say vayas, not vayasu. It says he made, not they made. But then again, it says vayas by everything. All declare Mishkan. And earlier, the Torah told us, we read this together yesterday, I think, or at least I learned it. The beginning of chapter 36 says, va'asa Bezalel, va'ahaliyav, v'chol ish chacham lev. Bezalel and Ahaliyav, who is his partner, and all of the wise people, all of the skilled people. So there was skilled labor involved in making everything, even though it says vayas. So it says it's singular, but it means whoever made it. So why is it that here we give attribution to Bezalel? And Rashi says, Lefisha nosan nafshei al hamalacha, because he devoted himself to making this. He literally spent his soul. He marshaled every ounce of wherewithal and ability and dedicated himself 100% to getting this done exactly as he was supposed to. Yoser mishar chachamim, more so than the other artisans and craftspeople. And therefore, nikras al shmai. That's why Bezalel's name is attached to it.
In other words, Rashi is telling us the truth is Bezalel didn't make the ark, necessarily. He had help. It was help making everything. There was no keli in the Beis HaMikdash made by one person. But Bezalel expended heart, mind, and soul. He poured himself into this. He gave himself over entirely to this specific endeavor. And therefore, the Torah gives him attribution. Let's take a look, just go through the verses of the ark, and then we'll try to look into this a little more deeply. So, up until this point, we only know about the wood ark that was fashioned. And now, the Torah says, Vayitzapehu Zohav Tor. This is verse 2. He covered it with pure as gold, Mibayis u'bachutz, from the inside and the outside. Vayas loy, he fashioned for it, Zeir Zohav Saviv, a golden crown, kind of a serrated edge, like a crown-like serrated edge for it. Now, of course, we know from our studies previously that he didn't actually gold plate the wood, but rather, Vayitzapeozov means he fashioned an additional two boxes. There was a box of wood, a box of gold that was inside the box of wood, and that all was placed into another box of gold. So, in fact, it was overlaid with gold, but he didn't actually gold plate it. Vayitzak loy arba tabezov, he poured for it four golden rings, al arba pamoisav on its four corners. There were two rings on one side and two rings on the other side. So they were all on the side of its width, and two rings on each side in order to hold the rods that would be inserted. And now we read in verse 4, Vayas Bade Atze Shitim, he made the rods or the staves of acacia wood, Vayitzaf Vaysom Zahov, he covered them in gold. Now the Meshech Chachma notes something very interesting. Here, with regard to the Aron, it doesn't say that he made Batim Levodim. It doesn't say he made a home, if you will, which is a euphemism, or a receptacle area for the staves. It says that with regard to the Shulchan, it says with regard to the Mizbeach, the small Mizbeach, why doesn't it use that terminology here? So he suggests that the notion of a bayit is a place where we live on occasion. You're not always at home. You have a home, but you're not always there. Normal people leave their home and come back to the home. He says the rods or the staves would be put in and taken out. That was the case by the Shulchan. That was the case by the Mizbeach, the small golden altar and the table. But he says, when it came to the Aron, we know, lo yosur mimeno. You never remove those rods. And as we once studied together, this is a message, a deeper message for us, that the Torah has to be ready to be carried to any place. There's no place that's inhospitable to Torah. No place where Torah cannot flourish. And that's what the staves represent. The Torah's cash and carry ability. It's always transportable. It can always be planted. No soil on planet Earth is foreign to Torah. So because of this, it wasn't just batim levadim. He didn't make just a receptacle, an area that the stave could occupy. It was as if these poles became a permanent fixture in the Aron, in the Ark. And that's why the verbiage changes. He placed the rods or staves into the rings on the sides of the Aron, losos ha'aron, in order with the intention of carrying the Aron. And once Bezalel places these rings in, they never come out. And then, after he finished making the ark, vayas kapeder zov, he made the gold cover, which was zov tor, all of pure as gold, no wood here. Amasayim v'chetzi arka, v'amah v'chetzi rochbei, the same exact dimensions of the box itself, in amah and a half by 2.5 amot. Vayas shnei kruvim, and he created the two cherubim that were adorned, that adorned the ark, the coming out of the cover, as a part of the cover, as we learned, miksha, hammered out from a single piece of gold. Also, Eisa Mishtek Tzeisa Kapeiris. He made them from the two sides of the Kapeiris. Kruv Echad Mizeh, the Kruv Echad Mizeh, one cherub on one side, one cherub on the other side, Mena Kapeiris, Asa Esa Kruvim, he fashioned the Kruvim, Mishtek Tzeisav, on the two sides. So what does this mean? How exactly did he make the two Kruvim on two sides? So the Rachayim kind of addresses the question, how exactly did Bezalel do this, the fashioning of Kruvim on two sides? And he says that when it came to the actual hammering out of the cover, So Bezalel first left lumps of gold on either side. He kind of hammered the gold, so there was two lumps. Took this block, hammered out the center, and created these two blocks on either side. And then, once these two blocks were created on either side, so then he pushed the gold being pushed onto either side of the block, of the ingot. This allowed for the Kruven then to be fashioned, coming up with their wings outstretched. And that's how he made it. The Emek Dover suggests that this is like kind of impossible. He says there's no way one person could have done this like that. Or two people could have done exactly the same thing. He says this had to have been b'derech nes, and he maintains, the Emek Dover maintains, that Bezalel did this by himself. And Emek Dover says it was a miracle. It's a miracle.
The gold was melted before?
No, the gold was not melted. The gold was hammered.
It was hammered?
Natural gold is very soft. It's malleable. So I don't know if he warmed it a little. Could have applied some external heat, but it wasn't melted. This was not cast. They were not cast cherubim. They were chiseled cherubim, sculpted cherubim, hammered out.
So what do we do with this?
Exactly. Why the Torah is going at this length? You know, to explain all that. I mean.
Well, what relevance is it? That's a good question. So let's take a look. See. Let's go back now to this idea. Let's take a look. We're going to see that Rashi is going to analyze the comment. The Rebbe is going to analyze the commentary of Rashi. The pasuk says, the verse says, take a look in the Biurim book, page Shin Pei Beis. Here's, this will help you do something with it. This will give you Simon Chof Aleph, the 21st entry in the Biurim Chumash for Parsha Vayakal.
Shin Pei Beis.
All right. So who made the ark? Depends who you ask. If you ask Ibn Ezra, what's he going to tell you? Bezalel made the ark. It says, V'yas Bezalel. You ask Ramban, he says, what are you talking about? It can't be. It's impossible. Bezalel made everything. They all made everything. Everybody was involved in everything. It can't be Bezalel made the ark by himself. So the Barbanel will tell you, no. It says he made the ark. And you'll say, how could that be? And the Emek Dover will tell you, a miracle. I said, I'm saying he can make a box himself, but how do you make the cherubim like that? How could one person do that by himself? How could one person lift something like that and put it in place? The whole thing seems like just, it's beyond. How could it be? This is b'derech nes. And Rashi doesn't seem to follow either simple approach like Bezalel made it. Or whatever, it doesn't matter. It says Bezalel, but everybody, it says Bezalel. It's an issue. But on the other hand, how could he have made it? So Rashi is the only one who comes up with this unique approach, saying that it was not only Bezalel who made it. Bezalel was one of a number of people who worked on the ark, but Moser Nafshe. He spent his soul on this. He gave himself away, so to speak, entirely. He dedicated himself to this 100%. And because he dedicated to himself 100%, the Kras Hashmai. That's why he's given attribution. It's called his name. So the Rebbe asks a simple question. Madua in Rashi mefarash es hakasuv kipshute. In Rashi, after all, is pshute shal mikra. He gives us the straightforward reading. The straightforward reading is Vayas Bezalel es ha'aron. Ask a child. Read this pasuk. Ask him who made the ark. He's going to look at you and say, I don't understand the title of your class. Who done it? Well, it's the mystery. It says in the Torah, Bezalel did it. I don't understand. Of course, Bezalel did it. Who else would have done it? It's obvious. Rashi says, well, not really. L'fisha nasa nafshe al malacha, because he dedicated himself, because he sacrificed himself. That's why we call it Bezalel. Just say it straight. Vayas Bezalel is like it says. It is what it is. It says what it says. And there's no questions. Vayas Bezalel. So the Rebbe's explanation is, Yesh Leimar, Shahasiba lekach, the reason that Rashi can't simply follow that approach, humishum shaha'orin le'nitin ho'yo le'yasasai, they other mechad bovad. This work could not have been done by one person. It's just not possible. Okay. So to come along and say, well, miracles happened, when we don't have a tradition for that, is not really appropriate. I mean, the Emek Dover is very comfortable just saying, it was a miracle. There's no Medrash like that. There's no Gemara like that. There's no Mechilta like that. We have no tradition about a miracle happening here. When it comes to the menorah, we have a tradition. Moshe Rabbeinu made the menorah, threw it into the fire. He was just blindly hammering away, and boom, the fire melted, and there was a menorah emerged. But we don't have a tradition like that with regard to the ark. And the Torah never suggests anything like that. And when it comes to the menorah, the scripture, the verse itself, seems to indicate it made itself. It emerged. Okay, so that's a scriptural allusion to the notion that it wasn't actually fashioned, hammered, sculpted, made by a person. When it comes to the ark, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that you should make the ark that way. It doesn't say the ark was made that way. In fact, here, specifically, we get attribution. But the problem is, practically speaking, that doesn't make sense. One person couldn't have made it. And therefore, the Rebbe suggests it has to be, that Rashi tells us that it has to be with a number of people, which brings us back to the original question, why is Bezalel getting attribution? And the answer is, because he put himself into it. This wasn't just a job for him. He committed himself 100%. Meleches ha'orin kol lagam es ha'kaperis v'akruvim. You see, the thing is like this. You could say, what's the big deal with making a box? But it wasn't just a box. There's a cover. And there's cheruvim. And it's not simple. It's a very difficult thing to do. Right? He had the Erech Chaim is trying to reason. How did this happen? How did they do it? It seems borderline impossible. Certainly for one person. And doesn't say that Vayasu es ha'kaperis. This is one continuation. It starts off by saying, chapter 37 says, Vayas Bezalel es ha'orin. And then it speaks about everything straight through until the end of verse 9, where we introduce the Shulchan. And there, once again, it says, Vayas es ha'shulchan. That means the Vayas Bezalel refers to the box, the wood box, the gold box, the rings, the staves, as well as the Keruvim and the Kaperis. So Meleches ha'orin, which included that was a gush zohov, a block or ingot of gold, mishkal atzum, of extraordinary weight. It's unbelievable, like a block of gold. You had to have a block of gold to be able to fashion the keruvim and their outstretched wings. This is not small, 2.5 amos. It's an enormous block of gold. I'm a sayin v'chetzi arki, I'm a v'chetzi rachbe, and I'm 18 inches, figure it out. 2.5 amos wide. Long, and I'm going to have deep. I mean, this is a big deal. So, in order to be able to pull that off, she'ibude v'hagbahasei, that it's fashioning, and then it's lifting, k'dei l'hanichan al aron, to place that cover onto the aron, darshu behechrich siyua sh'anashim esafim. There had to be other people. There had to be. So, with regard to the ark, it's true, it says v'asu, right, with regard to the commandment of making the ark, it says va'asu, which means they should make. It doesn't say va'yase or va'yase. It says va'asu. They will make. And the other kelim, it says va'asisa. The only keli that it says va'asu, they will make, is the actual ark. That was the Torah commanded us to begin with, that they will make. So the Rebbe points out from Rashi's perspective, it's impossible to say that Bezalel did this himself, when the Torah itself commanded they should make it. Besides, the rhyme and reason, the logic says otherwise. It's just impossible to fathom how one person could have made this. And that's why Rashi says, Hakavana b'milam v'yaz Bezalel es'aron. That's why he says Bezalel made the aron. It's eini lemer shehu asa es'aron levadai. It's not to say to you that he made the aron technically by himself. Elo lamdeinu, this comes to teach us a lesson. And in order to teach us this lesson, the Torah gives a Bezalel attribution. So that you and I can walk away from today's class not only knowing about a block of gold and sculpting and boxes and staves, and that Bezalel made it or others made it, or Bezalel made it together with others, but still he gets attribution. Why? Because Shenosan Nafshe Amalechas Amalacha Yesem Mishar Chachamim. Why? Because he put himself into it. In other words, if you put yourself into it, Hashem gives you credit. Usually, when it comes to material pursuit, we look at the final product. How much effort you put in is irrelevant. There's a beautiful story told at the Chafetz Chaim that he was once walking somewhere in the streets of Radin and he saw a child weeping. So he called the child over and he said, "How come you're crying?" And the boy said, "Because I got a terrible mark on my test. And all my other classmates got a good mark. And I'm worthless. And I can't get a good mark. And I don't know the Gemara." And the Chafetz Chaim said, "Did you try?" He said, "I tried so hard. I knocked myself out. I reviewed it again and again. But I put more time than anybody else, and I got the worst mark in the class." So the Chafetz Chaim said, "Let me tell you a story. There was once a fellow who came to a shoemaker. And he ordered a pair of shoes. Not like today, you walk in a store, you know, measure his feet, a pair of shoes. And the shoemaker put a tremendous amount of effort into making these shoes. He worked and he worked and he worked. And he brings it back and he puts on the shoes and they don't fit. It's too tight. So the guy says, I'm not buying these shoes. I'm not taking them. They don't fit me. The guy says, but I put so much effort in. He says, sorry. I don't pay you for effort. I paid you for a pair of shoes. The shoes you made don't fit. So the Chafetz Chaim said to him, when you make shoes, it's about you get paid for the end product. He said, but when you study Torah, the reward is for the effort you put in. He said, it doesn't matter what mark you got. The important thing is you put the effort in. In other words, where in the Torah does it say that when it comes to a report card, Hashem's report card, it's not about the final deed, what had to get done, but the effort we put in? Where does it say it? We know Lefum Tzara Agra. There's this Mishnah that says, according to the pain is the gain. You invest more effort. Where does it say it in the Torah? And the answer is, it says it right here. Do you know why Bezalel got credit? Bezalel got credit because he put himself into it. Other people worked on it. But who put himself into it? What does it mean, Mesiras Nefesh? It's a beautiful story told about, well, it's not such a beautiful thing, a beautiful time, when the Tsarist government, in its dying throes, what was it busy with? When it was dealing with the Bolsheviks and quelling a massive rebellion that eventually toppled the monarchy, what were they busy dealing with? What were they spending their time on? Persecuting the Jews. I mean, what else? Isn't that the smart thing to do? And what kind of persecution? Spiritual persecution. They decided that they would destroy the infrastructure for Jewish education. And Rasputin, Yimach Shemo, he, in his mind's eye, he envisioned this is the way he would destroy the Jewish people. He's a very smart man. Right? He was the puppeteer of the Tsar. So he would create this circumstances, laws, which would make it impossible for Torah teachers to qualify. So Torah teachers couldn't. You'd have to have other kinds of teachers. And these teachers would be people who didn't believe in Hashem and His Torah. They wouldn't give Jewish values. They would choose academia. And in this way, the Jewish people would finally collapse. That was his solution to the Jewish problem. Drain the education system of any spirituality. So there was a big asifa, a big gathering of all the Torah leaders of the time, of, you know, the areas of Poland and Russia and Ukraine that were under Tsarist domination. And there was many great people there. Reb Chaim Moizer was there, and Reb Chaim Brisker was there, Chafetz Chaim was there, the Rebbe Rashab was there. Anyway, right before the official proceedings were to begin, a message was sent that if they will vote against this decree, if they'll come against this openly, that the Tsar's promises 101 pogroms. It means the pogroms. Come on, little son. Come to the village, kill the Jews. 101 pogroms. So take it or leave it. They heard this, they were like, they didn't have the courage. So people got up, the speakers who were supposed to speak got up to speak, but nobody really said anything. They kind of spoke about the importance of Jewish education, but nobody came out stridently. The last one to speak was the Rebbe Rashab, and he spoke in a very fiery way. And he said that only our bodies were sent into Golos. Our neshama was never sent into Golos. And he says, as such, nobody has the right to control the Jewish soul. They can harm us, they can hurt us, they can beat us, they can never take away our Yiddishkeit. And he said, we will stand in the face, we'll stand and fight against any kind of any such decree. Nothing will deter us. We'll continue to teach Torah and study Torah. The meeting ended, and it ended that it would remain the way the Rebbe Rashab said. And as they left the meeting, the Rebbe Rashab was arrested. The Tsarist informants were there, and he was placed under house arrest. So later that afternoon, word got out that Lubavitch Rebbe was arrested. So the Chaim Brisker, he came to visit the Rebbe Rashab. He came to the hotel. There was sentries posted outside, and they allowed him in, and he found the Rebbe sitting and weeping. So he said, Lubavitcher Rebbe, mir haben doch gekon, als es mir gekonnt. We did everything we could do. Getan als es mir gekonnt. We couldn't do anything else. Our hands were tied. So the Rebbe Rashab said, yes, aber nicht matzir, we didn't succeed. And he said, he explained to him, that a person who's hired from 9 to 5, if you do your job conscientiously, and you're a good clerk, and you work at the business and do whatever, the business fails. What are you going to do? You go home. I work 9 to 5. Punch the clock at 5 and it's over. So, but if you own the business, then you never go home, so to speak. The business goes home with you. And it doesn't matter if you did your best, because what matters is the job is to get done. And that, my friends, is the meaning of Mesiras Nefesh. And that was Bezalel. That's how Bezalel made this ark. He wasn't just focused on the job that I had to get the gun. He put his soul into this. The failure was not an option. And when a Yid does that, then he gets attribution. You know what they say? You take the credit, I'll take the cash. But when the Eberstein gives credit, you want to take the credit. You want to get that credit. And for what does the Eberstein give credit? The Eberstein gives credit, we can see, for effort. The A is for effort. And Nasan Nafshe Ala Malacha, he spent his soul on this. He, more than everybody else, Nikras Al Shmoi, it becomes known for posterity as the Ark of Bezalel. And that you can take home with you.
Not similar to what Paul does yesterday in terms